Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
GM, I'm Dan Roberts.
And I'm Liam Kelly.
And this is GM from Decrypt. Okay, GM, welcome back to the pod, and welcome on for the first time, new co-host Liam Kelly for your first GM episode. What's up?
GM Dan, thanks for having me. Very excited. Really looking forward to speaking with OG Gitcoin lead Kevin Owocki.
That's right. We go way back with Kevin. We've interviewed him at a couple conferences. Big ETH Denver guy. We've seen him a couple years in a row or 3 years in a row at Mainnet. And as you said, definitely an OG. I mean, he's like, this guy's like a giga brain, basically.
Yeah. Far and beyond just crypto things. He's been open source software developer for a long time. His new product, Super Modular, sounds very interesting as well. I'm going to gather some more key tips and a bit of alpha from what he's working there in the so-called ReFi space, regenerative finance space. Sounds pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, ReFi. It sounds very like do-do-do-do-do-do. It's funny, the last time I saw Kevin in person, so it'll be good to get him back on, or at least on the screen, we had a Decrypt, like very small, intimate VIP crypto dinner in Boulder, and that's where Kevin lives. So that was when I discovered, and that was like a year and a half ago, but there is very much a vibrant crypto and DeFi scene in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, I don't know too much about Colorado or Boulder or Denver. In fact, I've been there once, but from what I can read on crypto Twitter and Twitter in general, it seems like a very lovely place. It doesn't surprise me that big brains come up like Kevin come out of there.
Yeah, and it fits. It's very environmental and hippie. And the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, came to our dinner. He's been a very pro crypto politician, which is always interesting because they're rare. But great, this is exciting, Liam, to get you on, and we'll bring Kevin on now.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Kevin Owocki, GM. Welcome.
GM, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Let's start this way. When you and I last spoke, it was at Messari Mainnet, not maybe 6 months ago, but a year before that. And we had a great interview. You were, of course, the CEO of Gitcoin. And now, fast forward, that is not the case. You have stepped back from that role as Gitcoin kind of decentralizes even further. Update us on that situation.
Yeah, totally. So for those of you who don't know, Gitcoin is a crowdfunding platform that's funded $50 million worth of public goods in the Ethereum ecosystem. And we noticed a sort of contradiction in that. You can't have a centralized funding mechanism for a decentralized ecosystem. And we made the decision to turn Gitcoin from a company into a DAO. So basically a decentralized protocol that could do crowdfunding. And we're built on top of this mechanism called quadratic funding. So Gitcoin is now a DAO with a decentralized governance mechanism and a decentralized protocol that is used to distribute the funding. So DAOs don't have CEOs. I have disaffiliated from Gitcoin. I still hold GTC. I'm still a big fan of them, still rooting them on from the edges. And now I am the CEO of a venture studio that is building stuff in the regen ecosystem called Super Modular. So super modularity is this idea in math that 1 + 1 = 3, as opposed to submodularity where 1 + 1 = 1.5. So how do we build stuff that has exponential value gain in the Web3 ecosystem? How do we repeat the success of Gitcoin? We're going to be launching new stuff 0 to 1 very soon. But cheering Gitcoin on from the sideline. They now have a decentralized governance and decentralized protocol. And it's been really great to see the transformation from a company to a DAO is like caterpillar to butterfly. It's a really big change.
Yeah, and we definitely want to get into Super Modular. Just another question on Gitcoin. First of all, when we first launched this podcast over a year ago, one of our first three guests was Eric Voorhees. And we had kind of a similar chat because he had stepped away as CEO of Shapeshift. He said, now there is no Shapeshift, the company, there is no CEO. Did he influence you at all? Did you talk to him? And then I guess I'd also ask, Did you want to have to step away? Did you feel like you had to? Did kind of the regulatory environment come into that at all for you?
So Eric is a friend, and I would consider him to be a fellow Colorado compatriot, although he's way more on the libertarian side of things, and I'm way more of a lefty than he is. Oh, we both have the shared experience of turning a company into a DAO, and I think it's been really great for Gitcoin and Shapeshift to kind of exchange notes about how to do that and exchange different processes through the time. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when we realized that Gitcoin was becoming a pillar of the Ethereum ecosystem and that you couldn't have a centralized pillar of a decentralized ecosystem, I kind of had this gut-wrenching feeling in my chest that, oh my gosh, we're building it wrong. We've been climbing the wrong hill for the first Gitcoin. I started in 2017. We made the decision to decentralize in 2021. So it was like 4 years that we were doing it the wrong way. And that was really hard. Decision to make, but I think it was the right one in the end. And, you know, I think that I did what's best for Gitcoin. I miss those people a lot. And, you know, it was my decision to sort of back away. But what I really hope, my highest hope is that this creates this sort of like fractal of success and decentralization where we have like leaders that don't hold on to power, that don't hold on to the door frames on the way out, like you typically see with a CEO on their way out of a company, and instead like really are building a bench of people who are going to replace them until you're totally decentralized. So it's been a journey for sure, but I think it's what's best for Gitcoin, and that's what's important.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that you've sort of stepped away from Gitcoin into Super Modular, which I would like to talk about just shortly. But you still, in a lot of ways, for a lot of enthusiasts, remain to be the Gitcoin guy or the face of Gitcoin. Much like, I guess, you know, Vitalik is sort of the face of Ethereum, and when he speaks, you know, Ethereum holders they listen. So how do you sort of, you know, you're not quite a CEO, and in crypto it works a little bit differently, but how do you sort of effectively back away from a project so as not to have any, too much influence over what's happening and their decentralization efforts?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I've been like sort of like an introverted nerd my whole life. And so, you know, the fact that I can step into a room and be a bull in a china shop and people care what I think is like kind of a new thing to adjust to like psychologically as well. And what I've been trying to do is just not be a bull in the china shop. So Gitcoin has a delegated governance structure. And so I delegate tokens to the people who I know are shepherding Gitcoin forward. And we do talk about what my views are on things. But at the end of the day, at the end of every conversation, I would say, it's up to you what to do. I trust you. I delegate it to you. It's your decision making. And you know, I really think it's just about empowering the next generation of leaders. And it's similar to in a corporate environment in which you bring on a bench of leaders and you're cultivating them by handing off power over time. And also the beautiful thing that no one talks about, by the way, here's a little alpha leak about decentralizing, is that you're not just decentralizing power, you're decentralizing stress. I just went on a 3-day ski trip up in the mountains in Colorado. I couldn't do that when I was running Gitcoin. So decentralization of power comes along with decentralization of stress. And it's been a great journey to pass the torch. But I'm learning every day and learning to let go emotionally and to trust the people that are involved in Gitcoin. And you know, so far so good. They launched the Alpha protocol, which is something that the protocol, the crowdfunding protocol, and that's not something that happened while I was there. So they're pushing things forward and coming up with new ideas and stuff that I could never come up with. And I think that's the beauty of networks over hierarchies is the ability to assimilate information from the edges. And we're starting to see that at Gitcoin.
I think this is the first time I've heard someone define decentralization as sort of a mental health hack. I think for those of us who've been in crypto for long enough, decentralization has been the end of my weekends and things like that. But so it's refreshing to hear this alternative. But I want to flip gears to Super Modular and talk a little bit about regenerative finance or ReFi. I've seen a lot of this has been hashtagged on Twitter and a lot of chat about this idea. But maybe you can give us sort of the 30,000 view of what ReFi is and I guess its promise.
Sure. So ReFi stands for regenerative finance. A regenerative system is something that increases in resource capacity over time. If you're watching on video, I'm making an up and to the right graph with my hands. And not just increases in capacity over time, but like when it hits a shock event, it can be anti-fragile and it can respond to that by getting stronger over time. And so, you know, I think that it's all well and fun to degen into different things, but let's just keep in mind that the root of that word is degeneration, which means resource capacity goes down over time. And, you know, if you invest in, like, I don't know, an ohm fork or something in the last cycle, then you know what it feels like to degenerate over time. And by the way, when I talk about resource capacity, I'm not just talking about financial resources. I'm talking about spiritual capital, intellectual capital, material capital, cultural capital, living capital. So how do we use crypto to create a bridge between finance and material capital and regenerate the earth? How do we regenerate intellectual societies? That's what I would call decentralized science. How do we regenerate the regenerators? I think that's kind of the niche that Gitcoin has gotten into. So, I think that Gitcoin has focused on this thing called public goods for a long time. And public goods are good. Public goods are like things like clean air and clean water and open source software and transportation networks, things that we all use, but we don't actually ever pay for. But I found myself getting into this conversation at like cocktail parties or like just explaining what public goods are. And it felt like it would take like 3 or 4 minutes to really explain what public goods are. Whereas regen, it feels a little bit more visceral. Like people understand what it means to regenerate a little bit more viscerally. And so we've pivoted I've pivoted a lot of my thinking and talking into talking about regen and trying to regen pill some degens. And I think ReFi is a budding ecosystem of people who are trying to use crypto for regenerative means.
It's funny. And you mentioned, you know, spiritual among the many elements of this. Our contributor, Jeff Benson, wrote that ReFi for now is kind of more of a vibe than a hard and fast category. Do you think that's fair?
I think that there's, in a decentralized ecosystem, there's going to be a vocabulary that develops in many different ways. And I have no problem with that definition. It is a vibe, for sure. But I think that, you know, we want to take that vibe. We want to take that cultural capital, if you may, and we want to turn it into crypto economic protocols that are going to create that vibe at scale and actually create a world in which everyone can work in their local communities and to make their rent by doing so. So the vibe might be the sort of like the kindling for something that the spark that's something bigger.
Is it hard, Kevin, to be kind of trying to rebrand parts of crypto and DeFi as, you know, environmentally positive? And we should mention your book, Green Pilled, when so many people out there, their image of crypto because of Bitcoin mining is basically the opposite. You know, they've just vaguely heard that crypto is bad for the environment and Bitcoin kills the rainforest. Do you feel sometimes like that's an uphill battle for now?
Yes, it is. But I also think that, we don't throw out the whole internet because we don't like porn sites, and because we don't like journalists, we don't throw out the whole internet. Like, I kind of think of crypto as like, in crypto, there's tens of thousands of token economic systems of crypto economic protocols. And let's not throw out the whole thing because we don't like the fact that Bitcoin's very energy wasteful. Same thing with the web. You know, you might not like a website or two, but just don't go to it. It doesn't mean that you shut down the entire internet because you don't like a website or two. And so, you know, my response to that sort of criticism is, okay, let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. And, you know, there are parts of crypto that are very environmentally friendly and actually environmentally positive.
And I guess we can get more into that, the ideological context of ReFi and how crypto fits into that sort of thing. But maybe to kind of bring this to a concrete example, maybe you can discuss a little bit about some of the things or some of the initiatives that Supermodular is kind of trying to move forward or fund in what you would call this, you know, ReFi umbrella. Maybe that'll help make this a little clearer.
So the story that we're telling about Supermodular is that we're a venture studio that ships regen ecosystems. And I'd say Gitcoin is our first big success. So that's an ecosystem that we created. We spun out. It's decentralized. It's on its own. the kid has gone off to college. And, you know, the question is, what's the next big 0-1 build that we're going to be doing? Have been collaborating with Protocol Labs on a project called HyperCerts, which you can kind of think of as just carbon credits, but on any impact vector. So instead of just, I took 10 tons of carbon out of the atmosphere, it could be, I fixed 10 potholes in my local community. I funded 10 months of open source software. I built this privacy maintaining tool. And so the idea is that as these impact DAOs are creating positive impact for the world, they can issue hypercerts by doing that. And what that does is it allows us to track the positive impact that crypto projects are having. And hey, what if there was a world in which we could engineer buy pressure for these hypercerts? We already know there's buy pressure for 10K PFP projects in the ecosystem. What if we could go from virtue signaling about what our virtues are to proof of virtue, where people are purchasing hypercerts, they're purchasing the impact that these impact DAOs are creating because they want a virtue signal, or maybe they have an ESG mandate or something like that. Well, what's incredible about hypercerts is that you've now taken any impact DAO that previously had to like run like a grant application, like donation to high net worth donor program. And now they're just making money by creating impact, by minting these hypercerts. And I can't tell you as someone who's been in and around nonprofits for years, what a simplification this is of impact DAO business models, just be able to create impact and to be able to make money by doing that. And so I think that hypercerts could be a really interesting primitive to track positive impact for the world. And that's a collaboration that we've got with Protocol Labs that we're working on right now, among a couple other like sprouts, small seedlings of projects that we hope to grow into the next Gitcoin.
So can I ask a few more questions about hypercert specifically. Yeah. I think the 10 potholes example is interesting. That's something that we can all kind of grok intuitively. Fixing potholes in your street, you know, is a good thing. So how would this work? So a DAO would be like in a neighborhood, for instance, a DAO of neighbors, for instance, would form and be like, there's all these potholes. How can we fix them? Let's pool our money. And then whoever basically fills them first and kind of tells us, they get the pot. How does this work exactly?
Yep. So basically, you can go to hypercerts.xyz, which is the website for hypercerts, and you can actually mint a hypercert right now. So basically, the idea would be that people would, in their local community, would fix the potholes, whether through a DAO or just individually. They mint a hypercert, and then basically, there's this role called the impact evaluator, and because anyone can mint a hypercert, it's hard to know if it was just made up or not. So you would get someone else in your community to play the role of the impact evaluator to come take a picture of the pothole and say, hey, it's filled and this person did it. And then you've got a hypercert that has an evaluation on it that says that this impact is actually legit. And then, you know, if there's someone in your community who cares about the potholes being fixed, say the local government or a nonprofit or just community citizens, then they could fund that hypercert. They could purchase that hypercert for you. This is sort of a silly toy example because it's a local, you know, a local community. The local government should be filling the pothole, not the community members.
They don't.
Right. And so here's the cool thing about working on impact in public goods is that there's $10 trillion a year that's spent on public goods through local governments, regional governments, and through nonprofits. And so what if we could create a less administrative overhead way of creating networks of impact that cuts out these like CEOs of NGOs and nonprofits that make tens of millions of dollars per year? What if we could create impact networks instead of nonprofit hierarchies is sort of like the big idea. And because they're networks, they'd be more responsive to what citizens actually want in the local communities. So that's like the profit motive behind impact DAOs, or like, I guess, like the business model behind impact DAOs.
It sounds like a much better form of Nextdoor, because the Nextdoor, as I know it, the one I'm in, it's just people complaining like a teenager was driving way too fast on this one road and his parents should be upset.
Well, and you know, this is what I mean when I talk about crypto regenerating the world, is that, you know, if we can take people who are just kind of like keyboard jockeys and virtue signaling on the internet and bring them to proof of virtue as like a cultural and spiritual and financial shift. If you can earn money by just fixing that pothole in your local community, maybe you'll get off your ass and stop complaining about your local community and actually contribute to your local community. So that's kind of the movement that we're trying to create.
I love it. It's a great soundbite. I wanted
don't give you too much credit. It's just a theory right now. I mean, we're just at the very tip of the iceberg of creating this, and we've seen it a little bit in Gitcoin, but the next 10 years, I think, are going to be pivotal for creating this kind of movement.
No, there's a lot of appeal there. I wanted to push you further. You know, you mentioned impact DAOs. Let's just talk a little bit about how the concept of DAOs has evolved, because it wasn't so long ago that the more prominent form of DAO was, let's all pool our crypto and like buy something stupid. You know, I shouldn't say stupid, but you know, Constitution DAO, and then there was a DAO.
The U.S. Constitution. You know,
right? Not at all stupid, but something stupid about. I don't know. I shouldn't have said stupid, but I know you know what
I mean. It's good. It's good at capital formation, right? You know, DAOs are really good at raising money.
Yeah, and that kind of had the unfortunate effect, I think, of making the idea of DAOs like a punchline for the mainstream media. And for other folks, because it was like, ha, look at these crypto nerds. They tried to buy the Constitution. They got outbid. And also they were extremely public about exactly how much money they had. So the rich guy, on the other hand, who happens to be someone who hates crypto, knew exactly how much to bid. And that was just the most prominent example. But another one was the DAO manuscript. And then, oops, these crypto nerds didn't realize that just because they bought a copy of the thing doesn't mean they can actually own the IP. Fine. Now it has evolved a little bit. Do you think we're in a better place, a more promising place? I mean, the other thing I'd mention is for a while there at the peak of the hype, people would say DAOs are the new form of company. And I was a little skeptical about that. I mean, you still need people in management roles to sort of keep the trains running.
Right. Well, I really love this piece that Vitalik wrote entitled DAOs Are Not Corporations, Where Decentralization Matters in Autonomous Organizations. And he talks about decentralization for credible fairness, which means credible neutrality. There's no CEO in the back that's going to, you know, change the rules on you. Decentralization for censorship resistance, which, you know, in the United States where we have pretty strong rule of law, we don't need to worry about this. But if you work in if you live in a country in which you have to worry about being censored, that's a big deal. And then decentralization for better decision making in concave environments, which is just a mathy way of saying democratic environment. So, you know, I think that DAOs could be like a superset of what all corporations are, and you could have just a corporation on the blockchain. But if you need those three attributes, credible neutrality, censorship resistance, or democratic environment, then I think DAOs enable something that companies don't even enable. So yeah, you're right. We're in the early innings, and some of the early examples of DAOs are just silly kind of things. But I mean, look at MakerDAO, billions of dollars of stablecoins, and hasn't lost the peg other than like for like 72 hours here and there. And I just think it's really incredible to create a decentralized network that's able to emulate the stability of the US dollar. So I think that there's real opportunity here, but it just depends on whether you're looking at the trivial examples of DAOs or if you're looking at the truly foundational aspects of DAOs.
You touched on MakerDAO, and we're talking a lot about public goods as well. And I think, one could, I think there's an argue for and against that Ethereum is truly a public good, but I would kind of drill down too. Do you think like something like MakerDAO is a public good? Do you think MakerDAO is also, part of this refi movement as well? Could you bunch it in there as well?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been running, I ran Gitcoin from 2017 to 2021, and we started off as a gig platform, like Upwork on chain. And I can't tell you, man, we went from paying people in ETH, which was a lot of fun on the way up. Like you ETH was $400 and you win a bounty and then it's worth $700 when you get paid out. That's awesome. But then all the way down, when it's 700 going to 400, the workers are like, and so right around that time, DAI got released and the stablecoin got released, and we started paying people on the gig platform aspect of Gitcoin using Maker or using DAI, and people loved it. The stability of like, this is going to be worth the same in 30 days was, I mean, I think that was the public good that Maker was exporting to the world. And, a lot of these things have their double-sided marketplaces where one aspect is a private good and the other side of the market is a public good. The whole like, is it a public good or not is sort of a gray area. I think Maker is exporting public good to the Web3 ecosystem. And, it's been interesting to see their governance proposals about making Maker carbon neutral or what was it? They were going to be like the first like green DAO or something like that. I haven't exactly followed very closely what where that governance proposal landed. But to see them think about banking being environmentally friendly, I think is a leading thing for the Web3 ecosystem. So I'll be curious to see where that shakes out.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, I've got a follow for you there because we're talking about Maker and DAI. It's interesting, Kevin, that you said, other than losing its peg for 72 hours here and there. As we tape this, we just a week ago had the USDC crisis because Circle had money in SVB. And so it went as low as 87 cents. And the whole thing lasted maybe two full days. It sounds like you think you're in the camp of that's okay. That shouldn't shake confidence. I mean, I was more like, well, if it's supposed to stay at a dollar and went to 87 cents, ain't great. Why should that not, shake people's confidence in stable coins like USDC?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what your Overton window of what's possible is. Like, I saw UST within 24 hours go from $1 to $0. Right. And so maybe my Overton windows. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that, it's so funny to hear in the mainstream media people talking about the banks need to be protected from crypto. But in crypto, we're talking about DAI had USDC on its balance sheet, which is a centralized stablecoin, where some of their reserves was in SVB. And because of that, that's what caused USDC and DAI to lose their pegs during that 48 hours. And, it turns out that Circle got the money recovered, and that's why it regained the peg. And so, when we talk about anti-fragility and being able to respond to shocks, I think it's important that these systems are able to respond to shock events like SVB collapsing, for example. But, I think as long as for me, the distinction between UST and USDC was that USDC went down to like 95 cents for 48 hours and then regained the peg after that, whereas UST lost the peg and then never recovered and went straight to zero. So it's how do you respond to shock events and how fragile are you, I think, is the delineating factor for me.
And it's interesting. We kind of talk about how which of these stable coins sort of thrived or succeeded amid this chaos. USDC's market cap dropped, and it doesn't look like it's really recovered yet. Whereas DAI, the market cap dropped as it lost its peg briefly due to this USD contagion, but the market cap has since shot up past its market cap before the crisis. And I think that's sort of a definitive example of what you're talking about in terms of refi. It's rebounded amid this chaos. And yeah. I guess I was wondering. I mean, we know that, DAI is backed in large part by USDC. Why do you think folks have decided, I'm jumping the boat from USDC. I'm going straight into DAI now. Why do you think people have made that shift in such a, kind of chaotic moment?
Yeah. I mean, decentralization is anti-fragility is the simplest answer I could give. By the way, can we just talk about for a second, I'm going to shitpost a little bit, but like, why is it called fractional reserve banking in traditional banks, but it's called under collateralization in DeFi or algorithmic stablecoins? Like, feels like there's a little bit of a double standard there that these traditional banks can do fractional reserve stuff and it has to be fully collateralized in crypto. There's probably something there about where stability comes from. We don't have an FDIC to back DAI. And so, the fact it has to be fully collateralized in order to maintain its peg. And I think there's something really important about from first principles, the coin's able to be anti-fragile in that way. But, to the extent that it depends on USDC, you're kind of depending on FDIC backing of the banks at that point.
Well, it's like it all goes back to crypto people or projects are still trying to use terms that convince non-crypto people. Like very often there's a couple of people who are more in your kind of DeFi world. But when I ask about like, oh, but the mainstream doesn't understand this or there's still too much friction or occasionally the less common answer is people say, well, that's fine. Then they won't understand it. You know what I mean? Like they're, that's the overstressing of we're collateralized. And here are the mainstream bank accounts where we have the reserves. Well, it's not the crypto people that need to hear that to feel confident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. This is where, you know, as a software engineer, I'm just a bad marketer and I don't know how to convince people of anything. My formula with Gitcoin, by the way, has always just been like, try to provide as much value as possible because actions speak so much better than words. And, you know, the number one thing anyone in crypto can do is try to create projects that have actual utility for the world. If we want to convert more people into crypto. And by the way, we should do things that have utility for the world because that's a means and an end in itself before it's a means to, like, you know, pumping our bags and crypto going up and stuff like that. So that's what I'd like to see in the next cycle. But I don't know. We'll see. It's a decentralized ecosystem and I'm just one node in the network.
Speaking of excellent utility in crypto networks, I'd like to talk about the latest NFT collection, the Quadratic Voting NFT collection. It looks like it's gathered a lot of steam. I think last time I checked on OpenSea, it's got like 11,300 Ethereum in trading volume. Can you walk us through a little bit about how this collection came to be? I noticed there's a few signed assets or pieces in there as well. Yeah, just talk a little bit about the ideation for this. The art is pretty cool. It's very unique. And, you know, Quadratic Funding has kind of become a meme, I think, in the crypto space. It's such a powerful idea. And maybe you could talk us a little bit through this.
Yeah, you're asking about Gitcoin Presents, the collection.
Precisely, yeah.
Cool. Well, you know, it starts where it ends a little bit. You know, we talked about Gitcoin decentralizing into a DAO and its governance structure being up to the people who are involved in governance, not just me anymore. So, and when you ask me about the ideation process behind Gitcoin Presents, I actually have no idea because, you know, the DAO and the marketing workstream is in charge of this stuff now. But what I do know is that they came to me and the marketing workstream said basically like, hey, Glenn and Vitalik and Zoe wrote this paper on quadratic funding, which for those of you who don't know is the mechanism that funds public goods on Gitcoin. Were you going to say something, Liam? No? Okay, cool. So basically, quadratic funding is this really beautiful mechanism that helps allocate capital in a democratic way. And Gitcoin's built on top of quadratic funding. And by the way, like Gitcoin's original mission is to fund open source software. So it's kind of like apropos that we're all standing on the shoulders of giants, like all these open source packages and everything. And Gitcoin itself is built on quadratic funding and all of this open source, this open source ecosystem. And, we just all think that we're standing on the shoulders of giants all the time. And I know that there's a ton of reverence for Glenn and Vitalik for writing the quadratic funding paper at Gitcoin. And so they basically just asked like, hey, Glenn, Vitalik, Zoe, will you sign the quadratic funding paper? We'll turn it into an NFT and basically allow the NFT community to enter the Gitcoin ecosystem by purchasing a piece of internet history, this quadratic funding paper. And so that was the drop from Gitcoin, was basically auctioning off versions of the quadratic funding paper that were signed by Vitalik and Glenn and Zoe. And they also twisted my arm a little bit and got me to write a little bit about quadratic funding. And I also signed that. So basically what this was just a drop that was meant to fund public goods. All of the proceeds, well, I think the Gitcoin portion of the proceeds went to fund the Gitcoin matching pool. And it allowed the NFT ecosystem to learn a little bit about Gitcoin along the way. And by the way, I just want to, like, while we're doing this episode, I just want to go on record and say that Vitalik was very nice in that he signed the quadratic funding paper. But then I was really dismayed to see on Twitter that people were calling it a Vitalik NFT drop. He had nothing to do with the drop, as far as I know. He just signed the paper to be nice to Gitcoin and to help out a little bit. And so, you know, to see people like shitposting about how, I don't know, this is going to get you access to Vitalik or his decision making or anything like that, kind of, it made me feel like the degens kind of ran away a little bit with the narrative there. But yeah, to answer your question, it was basically we think an artifact of internet history to have a signed copy of the paper from the paper authors. And that was the drop from Gitcoin. And again, Gitcoin, the DAO, conceived of this and executed of it. I only know what is available publicly because it's a DAO and I'm not in charge of it anymore.
You've given us a great segue to just get your take on NFTs in general. I mean, as you alluded to, people feel very strongly. There's the people who, you know, they would buy in and collect something like that because they just are NFT people. And then maybe it brought some new people into the NFT space by doing that. But, you know, do you own a bunch, not own any? Do you have a take on, like, it even feels like there's multiple corners now evolving. There's still like the, you know, monkey JPEG flipping corner. And then there's the, we can use NFTs for real utility and maybe even for crypto for good, you know, like in the case of Ukraine.
Yeah. Oh man, it's just like such a hard question. What are the utility of NFTs is like asking what's the utility of like a organization. Like the aperture is just so wide there. There's many different types of organizations and there's many different types of non-fungible assets in the world. And I'm a believer that NFTs are gonna, I think that they have the right semantic schema to do things like hypercerts, tracking the impact that we create and fractionalizing that, to take the deed of your house and to put it on chain, to create a digital identity and profile pictures. And so my prediction would be that I think that over the next 5 years, we're going to see a fracturing of the NFT space into several different subspaces that, I don't know, by 2025 probably will each be as big as the 2021 NFT space as a whole. And that the fractional, like in 2025, we're going to be talking about profile picture NFTs versus like deeds to a house NFTs or pieces of internet history NFTs. And each of those sub ecosystems could be as big as NFTs were in 2021 from there. So not financial advice, but just like a prediction that I have about how everything's going to evolve.
Yeah, I guess in some one could say that you're rather bullish on NFTs just continuing to expand. But you mentioned the term again, and before I let you go on that, can you explain what is hypercert? What is this word you're saying? Where did it come from? And yeah, it's kind of an odd one.
I was thinking cert must be certification.
Yeah, so hyperserts are the like tracking impact, like. I took 10 tons of carbon out of the atmosphere. I fixed 10 potholes in my community. I helped 10 little old ladies cross the street. Basically they're like impact certificates, but the idea was to make them, you know, how like links became hyperlinks online. That's the idea behind hypercerts is that they're hyper certificates because they're imbued with all this metadata. By the way, to bring it back to your question about NFTs, they're NFTs. So, that's what makes them hyper certificates.
Everything is going to be an NFT, but we're not going to call it that. That's my take. I know I'm not the only person to say that, but it's just, it's all tokens, you know, especially if people are so triggered by the acronym. Wait.
What did Reddit call them? It was like community badges or something like that.
Oh, yeah, digital to get people collectibles, who hated
blockchain.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so transparent. People are like, we know what you're doing.
Yeah, but you know, the semantics matter a lot in how you present things. So I'll be curious to see what final form they take.
Speaking of semantics, and as you said earlier, you're doing a hand motion, and there's a podcast my wife listens to, a sports podcast, where they call it bad radio. But you know, things that you can only see if you're watching the video. Tell us about the t-shirt you're wearing.
Yeah, so a little piece of bad radio here. My t-shirt says, "What if it turned out better than you imagined?" And it's a t-shirt that I got from the GM bus, which was a bus that was traveling around the United States in 2022, going from conference to conference and trying to project optimism into the crypto community. So I got this t-shirt from the GM bus, and I'm on the GM podcast right now. So I figured it was apropos to wear it and create some, would you call it bad radio? To have something that only the visual listeners can see?
Love that.
And I guess we kind of danced around the subject a little bit, talking about public goods and also, you know, open source development and that kind of thing. And I think intuitively people can understand why, you know, clean air and, you know, like uncontaminated water and smooth streets are all like advantageous and things and good for society overall. But I guess maybe what is it, you know, you're an open source developer as well, or you dabbled in that arena as well. What is sort of your you know, why is open source development something worth funding and sort of worth fighting for?
Open source software, there was a study in 2014 by, I think it was the Drucker Forum, that said something like $400 billion per year in economic value is created by open source. Boy, 2014 is like 8 years ago, so it's probably like 5x that now, especially with crypto networks being built on top of open source. And with Gitcoin, at least when I was involved with it, the mission was stated as grow open source. And the asymmetry we saw was that $400 billion per year in economic value is created by open source software. But the people who are working on open source are not able to pay their bills by doing that. They have to go get a job at JP Morgan and then work on open source nights and weekends away from their family. I just feel like that was a really big injustice for the world, but also economically inefficient, because you were seeing open source maintainers that were abandoning their packages. They couldn't pay their bills by doing the work. So, you know, why would they keep showing up and answering all your bug requests? And so basically it's correcting the asymmetry between value creation and value capture. And by giving the projects that are just creating value for public goods a way to make money. That's what Gitcoin has done. It's $50 million worth of funding for open source and adjacent public goods. And when we started working with Vitalik on quadratic funding, he kind of public goods pilled us. Hey, Kevin, it's not just open source that's a public good, but it's decentralized science and it's diversity, equity, inclusion. It's funding humanitarian causes in Ukraine. During COVID, we had people who were raising money for COVID pandemic response on Gitcoin. So, you know, herd immunity is a public good. And so basically, you know, from open source, you can follow that line to all different sorts of public goods. What if you could use quadratic funding to fund lots of different public goods? And I think that what the public goods to me that are the most interesting out there is, like, my local government is responsible for the public goods in my local city, Boulder, Colorado. The state of Colorado is responsible for Colorado's public goods. The United States is responsible for the United States public goods, but there's no real body that has legitimacy in creating public goods for the entire world. I mean, maybe like the UN, but like even that's like slow as molasses and it only really represents the West. What if we could use the internet and create protocols for supporting global public goods? Now we've got such a globalized world and there are things like open source software, which is a transnational public good, herd immunity, which is a transnational public good, privacy, in a world in which there's surveillance capitalism, I think is a public good. And so it's about creating networks and protocols that can support global public goods that I think is like the big opportunity that blockchain has, because there's not like a world government, and I don't think there should be a world government, but if we can create world coordination mechanisms to support the world's global public goods, I think that that's a net export of a net positive export for crypto to humanity and a great use case for crypto economic networks. And that's what Gitcoin and Ethereum and CLR Fund and Giveth and all these other projects that are Regen Web3 are aiming to do for the world.
Nice. You know, as we start to wind down, Kevin, we sort of climb out of the rabbit hole a little bit and try to do some more fun stuff or less technical. I wanted to make sure I ask you, we just had ETH Denver recently. And, you know, you've kind of become like an ETH Denver celebrity at this point on the ground there. What did you make of this year's, especially in this bear market? How was the vibe from afar? I had just gone to NFT Paris, and that's why I didn't go to ETH Denver this year. But from afar, there was, I remember day one, I'm sure you'll remember who it was, but some crypto influencer person was dressed up in a costume and got roasted on mainstream Twitter. And so there were people sort of on the outside looking in, making fun of the crazy crypto folks. But what did you walk away from it this year thinking?
Yeah. Well, what's the meme? First they ignore us, then they laugh at you, then they fight you. Right. So at least we're on step two. ETH Denver is a vibe. We've got Governor Jared Polis, who's very crypto friendly, wants to create an innovation state in Colorado. And it's just a breath of fresh air in which crypto is kind of getting pounded from all sides in the public eye and from regulators. I'd say the vibe was pretty high. Lots of builders building stuff and lots of action in Colorado for Web3. So it made me very optimistic to see how much traction the Web3 community has had. And I spent ETH Denver has gotten so big that there's now like several sub communities. There was the DAO area, there was DeFi area. The John Pollard named the area that Supermodular's booth was in Regenlandia. So it's Regenlandia. I hung out a lot there, and I would say that the regen use cases and impact DAOs are just like this simmering, like this slow burn of Web3 activity, and the vibe in that area was pretty high. So I think that people are hurting a little bit for funding, and it's kind of weeded out a lot of the speculators, but the builders are still there and they're still building, and so I'm excited to see how ETH Denver evolves from here.
Awesome. And you mentioned the builders, and you mentioned, you know, speculation and general degenerism, or I don't know what the term is. You'll have to forgive me. But I guess I would be curious on your take, because a lot of that also happens on Twitter. And I guess a quick, you know, way to end this perhaps is, you know, overrated or underrated crypto Twitter. Do you find it valuable? Do you find it useless? Do you find it just fun? I mean, do you think it's do you think crypto Twitter is a public good, or perhaps not?
Yeah, I think it's all those things. It's overrated, underrated, valueless, hilarious. It's full of alpha. You could just scroll your feed and you could get all those things all at once. It's crypto Twitter is everything everywhere all at once. So I'm going to say overrated and underrated, depending on where you are in your feed.
Good topical Oscars reference too with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
let's end this way. We mentioned, you know, your own book that you put out, Green Pilled. Something we've been asking guests recently with some interesting results. What are you reading? What have you been enjoying recently on printed Dead Tree matter?
Yeah, I've been reading A Pragmatist Guide to Governance recently, which I just think it's really incredible to learn about all these different trends in governance that have evolved in, like, they talk about governance in like family offices to high school cliques, to organizations, to DAOs. And I just think that it's really interesting to learn about patterns in governance from there. I've been reading The Art of Alignment, which is like a guide to inclusive leadership and doing dialogue mapping, basically like creating shared understanding of abstract problems with people across the world. Like, I know Gitcoin and Supermodular have employees and contributors on 5 or 6 different continents. And so just basically figuring out how to create an inclusive environment where they can all add to understanding the world's most wicked problems. So a lot of stuff on governance and leadership has been on my bookshelf recently.
You need a novel in there, some sci-fi, something.
Yeah, I think, well, you only asked about books, but I consume every piece of Star Trek content that is ever out there. So I don't know if it counts if it's just you just gave me the Spock the Spock symbol right there. Yeah. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and I don't know, like I think that science fiction and futuristic novels kind of give you a way of projecting the current trends out into the future. And Star Trek, at least, I find to be a very optimistic vision of humanity in which we've all gone out to the stars and created this pluralistic world of infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And Star Trek, I think, is something that we could all shoot for optimistically. But I also really like dystopian sci-fi as well. I read this book called The Water Knife recently, which was all about early 2020s in which the Western states are all fighting over water with each other, which is like maybe a little bit too close to home living in Colorado. I read this book called the series of books called The Singularity Series, which is all about AI that there's four books and one set in 2025, 2035, 2045, and then 2055. And the progression of the book is a story of AI taking over the world, like progressively. Every 10 years, it gives you a snapshot of how AI has infiltrated humanity's life. And I read that before the ChatGPT-3 stuff happened. So maybe I'll have to come back to that. But yeah, alternating between optimism and dystopian sci-fi, I think, is a really great thing for a technologist to do as well.
Awesome. And ending on AI is also very nice for a crypto podcast. That's all the questions that I have. Thank you, Kevin, for the insight and the laughs.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah,
it's great to be here.
That's our show today. Thanks for listening. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to GM wherever you podcast. And if you head to our website, decrypt.co, you can find the full videos of every interview with every guest. Finally, we have a Telegram room for our loyal GM listeners. The address is t.me/GM podcast. If you pop in there, you can get direct access to the co-hosts. You can suggest future guests, submit comments, and ask questions. It's t.me/GM podcast.
GM.